This is How Success Happens, where the staff of Entrepreneur chats with innovators, writers, artists, chefs, and a range of other unique personalities to better understand the traits that make excellence possible.
Nobody in Silicon Valley thinks it's actually them. They think everybody else is like this.
One of my regrets actually now, we should have pulled the plug sooner.
It's amazing when the universe sees you commit, how all of a sudden all these resources start to come together.
Thanks for joining us. And now, How Success Happens.
Hi, I'm Joan Olick, Associate Contributors Editor for Entrepreneur.com, and you're listening to our How Success Happens podcast. Today's guest is Margaret Morris. She goes by Margie, and she's just published an intriguing new book, Left to Our Own Devices, Outsmarting Smart Technology to Reclaim Our Relationships, Health, and Focus. The publisher is MIT Press. The book's focus is on the creative ways people adapt new technology devices to serve their needs in ways their designers never intended. This is of interest to Morris, a trained PhD clinical psychologist whose research focuses on how people use technology to improve their relationships or even themselves. So, for instance, she writes about how a woman played words with friends to draw a relative who had problems attending family gatherings back into their social circle. She writes about how a wife used smart lights to communicate an interpersonal problem to her husband. She turned the lights outside the house red so he could see them when he pulled into their driveway. Her objective was to communicate that she was getting fed up with her husband bringing home dinner guests on short notice. But I'll let Margie tell those stories herself. The cool thing about her is that she was all set to be a clinical psychologist, with the well-appointed office and the couch and all. But then she decided that clinical psychology was stuck in what she calls a 19th century paradigm. And what she really wanted was to be based in the 21st century with all the new technology coming down the pike. As a result, Morris spent 14 years as a senior research scientist at Intel, working on new technology, and has been a consultant for Google. She currently teaches at the University of Washington in Seattle. Margie will tell us about her book and her research in a moment, but first, a word from our sponsors. If you have a business or you know someone who does, you probably know that small business owners wear a lot of hats. And some of those hats are totally great, but some, like filing taxes and running payroll, for example, not so great. That's where Gusto comes in. Gusto makes payroll, taxes, and HR actually easy for small businesses. Fast, simple payroll processing, benefits, and expert HR support, all in one place. Gusto automatically pays and files your federal, state, and local taxes so you don't have to worry about it. Plus, they make it easy to add on health benefits and even 401ks for your team. Those old-school, clunky payroll providers just weren't built for the way modern small businesses work, but Gusto is. So let them wear one of your many hats. You have better things to do. Listeners get 3 months free when they run their first payroll. Try a demo and see for yourself at gusto.com/HSH. That's gusto.com/HSH. And now for our second sponsor. This episode of How Success Happens is brought to you by Shaper. Shaper is the number one business networking platform that helps you meet the right people to help grow your business. Are you looking for investors, a co-founder, a new job opportunity, or just inspiring conversations? Shaper will find people with similar goals by combining your self-selected interests, location, and industry to produce daily suggestions of relevant professionals you may want to meet. When both people say yes to a connection, the app allows you to message and set up a time to meet. Get Shaper and improve your networking game. Download the app today or check out their site at shaper.co. That's Shaper, S-H-A-P-R.co. You won't regret it. Margie, you wrote, I've spent almost two decades talking with people about what they want to change in their lives and how that ties in with their devices. How does left to our own devices
talking with people about their relationships, their health concerns, their health aspirations, and noticing that the people who use technology in the most productive ways are people who really make technology their own. They're the people who are irreverent towards it, don't worry about instructions, even the instructions that I've given them about how to use a prototype. It's when they're able to adapt the technology that they find paths to what they're after. I've spent a lot of my career working on technologies to help with emotional regulation, help people with emotionally sensitive communication or with lifestyle changes. And I've noticed that people, for example, who share devices that, such as like a mood phone that we gave them that was supposed to be strictly for their own use, that those people got a lot of benefit from sharing it, for example. I've also noticed the same thing with how people use mainstream products that I've observed. So, for example, or that I've asked them about, so even something like Tinder, you know, it's supposed to be used to help people meet people. Instead, I've watched and heard about people using it with no intent to meet people, but just to get validation that helps them bounce back from a breakup or get more certain about kind of who they feel they are. And similarly, I've observed really interesting and productive uses of things like smart lights or scales or even augmented reality like Pokemon Go being something like that being used instead of as a game, really as a almost as a mental health tool to overcome social anxiety. Those are a couple of examples. The commonality is owning the technology and making it work for you.
I love the stories in the book about people's uses for technology that those devices' original designers never intended. I mentioned a few, but tell us maybe two or three of those stories in some depth to get across how people change these things around.
Well, I'll start with the story about smart lights. Now, smart lights aren't marketed to anyone as a communication tool, much less a couples counseling tool. But that was pretty much how this one woman used them. She and her partner have a great relationship, but they're really different. She's pretty introverted. He's super social, always spontaneously arranging social gatherings, inviting people over. And that was kind of where one of the areas where their differences created a bit of a tension. You know, he, like, last minute dinner guests weren't her cup of tea, even if she liked the people. So they had these Hue smart lights, which, you know, most people think of as an efficiency tool, right? You can set the lights to timers, some people like the aesthetics of having different colored lighting. But she really changed their purpose into a communication tool when her, and the example in the book is that when her husband gave her, like 30 minutes notice, she was still at her office saying, "Oh, I'm bringing home so-and-so tonight." What she did was from her office, change the lights at home, the ones in the window, a red color to indicate to him that there was like this issue that they needed to talk about. So the guests came over. This actually happened a couple times, and she escalated by turning multiple lights red. And on the second time that this happened, after the guests left, they talked about it, sitting down with the app and experimenting, changing the colors of the lights and talking about how they could host in ways that really worked for both of them. So what I loved about the story was that she used the lights to externalize the conflict and to find another way into this conversation that they'd been having for a very long time, but in a way that didn't put him on the defensive. And it also, because it's light, light is very metaphorical. We understand that, at the time, like sun changes, the sun goes down, fire has, different degrees of intensity so people understand that lights change and so they could see, all right, we can work this out. We can change this dynamic. I also think the Words with Friends example that you mentioned is pretty powerful. That woman who used Words with Friends to bring back a family member from the outskirts of the family. He had been, you know, withdrawing from gatherings and really not talking if he did come. You know, she's really busy. She runs a company. She takes care of her, you know, her mom as well as her kids and all these, you know, cousins. And so she's not playing Words with Friends to kill time. She did it because she knew this relative was like into the game. And so she engaged with him there, knowing that that offered a different way of connecting and that he really thrived in that environment. You know, he matched her at every turn and has a really incredible vocabulary and often would have like dozens of games going on at once. So because of this, she was able to talk about him in a different way with the rest of her family. Some of them started playing with him, but they went from like worrying about him to kind of having this admiration of his verbal skills. And that changed the way other people saw him. It changed the way he thought about himself. So I think, cool, you know, many times a game like Words with Friends will have the byproduct of bringing people closer, but we can also use that as the motive, and that's what she did.
The book's foreword is by Sherry Turkle, and I found that intriguing because I would think she's the polar opposite of you and your message. Her TED Talk on the alienation that digital devices breed in society attracted 5 million views, and yet she still wrote the foreword. And a lot of people these days are talking about society's difficulty in empathizing and having good old-fashioned in-person conversations, and they're blaming technology. And then we come back to you, and your message about technology is a lot warmer and a lot more positive. Can you say something about that?
Yeah, I'm trying to offer what I've seen as these bright spots of people being intentional and clever about the way they bring technology into their relationships to work out problems or to enhance a connection, either in a playful way or in a serious way, to address a problem where words have failed on their own in the past. I've also, you know, there are also a lot of examples in there about health, but I think the interpersonal examples are more pertinent to your question. I certainly acknowledge that there are a lot of ways that people do use technology to avoid other people. And so I'm not saying that that doesn't happen. I think that's disconcerting. But I also think there are a lot of opportunities to keep the relationship in mind and prioritize that. But then use whether it's some data, whether it's an app or actually a physical device, use that to either make shifts or in some conversations it's helpful to have this third thing to point to. I'll give an example. So one man that I interviewed, he lives by himself. He's really and very career focused and would like to have a family, but that's never really happened. But he often has friends or friends of friends staying with him for months at a time. And he does this not, you know, not to get a rent contribution, but more just for the sense of family. And on one occasion where a friend of a friend was staying with him for several months and he wanted to deepen their friendship and didn't really know how. And at this time, he had recently purchased a smart scale. So these are scales that are connected to the internet. They, rather than just giving you a single readout of your weight, they show you a trend. And they can also send you messages via text or tweets or emails to, let you know about your progress. And they're really intended as like kind of self-optimization goals, like self-track, be your best self. But, you know, on one occasion, he got an email from his scale, and the scale said, congratulations, you've lost 15 pounds. And he knew he hadn't lost any weight. So he realized that there must have been someone else stepping on the scale. And he deduced, like, okay, it's only 15 pounds, so it's not this guest who's been staying with me, but maybe she has a new man in her life. Like that. And he sent her a teasing email joking about that. And they had this banter back and forth where she teased him about not understanding his scale, and they kind of both knew what was going on, but it gave this, he could point to this data, send her this joking email, and it did end up shifting their dynamic. It was more playful, and they also this opportunity for them both to talk about their relationships. So I think, you know, sometimes we, you know, whether it's pointing to a tree or pointing to a readout on a scale, sometimes we need something else to make a conversation go on. In many of these cases, he doesn't care that it's a scale. It could be a security camera. It's really the relationship that's prioritized.
Our website focuses in on entrepreneurs, people starting companies or maintaining small companies, and technology plays a big, big role in all this. What message could you offer to any entrepreneurs listening in who might have ideas for new devices or new uses for existing devices?
You know, whether, and I think we're using the term device broadly, right, to be any new kind of service or
app or, yeah, sure.
I think anything that really helps people get closer to other people over and helps them navigate their own anxieties or the sort of practical obstacles to moving a conversation forward, I think those are the magic technologies. I think often when people think, oh, the technology is going to be social, that means posting it to Facebook or tweeting it. In my research, it means something different. It means a mood app that you end up, instead of just using by yourself, you use it with your son, and it changes the relationship. Or it's something you use with a spouse, or, you know, it's finding opportunities for the technology to be involved in close relationship, the relationships that matter to people. That's mm-hmm. one thing. I think another thing is that a lot of technology is designed with very specific, you know, quote, use cases in mind. It's like so-and-so wants to buy laundry detergent or they want to unlock their house. I think it makes sense to pay attention to what people want in the long term for themselves. And sometimes that's at odds with what they want immediately. But I think keeping my research in my interviews, I really try to understand how people see themselves, not just in the present, but in the past and the future. And I think those, considering the broader arcs of people's, you know, we'd call their life stories or their sense of themselves, I think that's important.
So say an entrepreneur contemplating inventing a new app perhaps should think outside the box, as they say, you know, think more broadly about what his or her app might be able to accomplish.
What it might be able to help with and how that aligns with people's values. And, you know, I think a lot of times we're designing for more of immediate gratification than values. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing. I think another thing is realizing that, you know, the people are pretty diverse and in terms of what's going to be helpful to them. There's been this assumption, you know, that everyone needs more physical activity, for example. And that's, you know, probably very true at large, right? Like Americans are sedentary, but not everyone. Mm-hmm. And for some people, that step counting feedback is precisely the opposite of what they need. And so they have to actively resist these kinds of, you know, this feedback and these nudges to move because it may play into or does for some people, you know, trigger these kind of compulsions to overexercise. So it creates an antagonistic relationship with the technology. So I think to the extent to which people can make it easy for people to shape their experience and embed their own goals in a technology so that they don't have to kind of experience a particular product in the same way that everyone else does.
Given the nonstop advancements coming down the road from artificial intelligence and virtual reality to the Internet of Things and the cloud, getting rid of physical devices, et cetera, what do you see our relationship with our devices evolving to, if anything different?
Yeah, I think a lot of that will depend on contextual factors that, you know, are hard to predict. But I think we already see, as I described in the book, already see people detaching a little bit from these the physical objects of their, you know, their phones. You know, in one of these great quotes from Sherry Turkle in, you know, 2006 was a woman who described the dropping her BlackBerry or the death of her BlackBerry. She said, "I nearly died." You know, she or I think it, maybe it was when she lost her BlackBerry. And I think now, you know, for a long time we felt that way about our phones, right? Those quickly subsumed the BlackBerry, but like, or the, maybe that was, you know, the Palm Pilot. But anyway, so, you know, for a long time, I think we all felt like our, you know, our friends were actually inside our phones in some way and that it was devastating to lose one. I think now it's expensive to lose one and it's, can be a little scary about our, who has it. But there's not that same crisis. There's this loose confidence, even if we don't know the details of where in the cloud our stuff is backed up. So I think that has created a little bit of a little bit more room between us and the device, and I think that's probably that may continue. On the other hand, you know, you asked about AI, and I you know, it may be that the when apps you know embodied in a particular physical device, if those really have an intelligence, it may be. Maybe inviting to connect with those devices if they seem to really understand us. I think the challenge for us as individuals using these, engaging in these kinds of technologies and with designers is to parlay that into a connection with a real human being. I'm on what Douglas Rushkoff would call team human. You know, I think we should prioritize our relationships with other people and design technologies that help us turn those relationships into the relationships we want.
Margaret Morris, thank you so much for your time.
I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Likewise. Okay, take care. Thank you. That's our episode. We hope you enjoyed it. How Success Happens comes out every week. To catch each episode, please subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Like, share, and leave us a review so we can always be improving. Go to entrepreneur.com for more episodes of this show and our other great podcasts. That's entrepreneur.com. Thanks.